as we've been hearing on countless news programs. Jamie Krems is a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. And did you notice what she said about chimp reconciliation, touching hands? Now, this is from the famous work of Frantz Duval at Emory University. And Frantz died just 3 weeks ago. So to remember him and those animals, chimps and wolves, here's a talk I recorded at the AAAS, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, when he was the main guest speaker in 2012.
Yeah, so about American politicians, Newt Gingrich had read Chimpanzee Politics and had recommended it to the Republicans. And then soon thereafter, Jimmy Carter, who is not a local politician in Atlanta, contacted me that he had read Peacemaking Among Primates, and I've always felt that they should have switched books. Gingrich needed more peacemaking and Carter needed more power politics. So this is a talk about the origin of morality in a way, and we have this view in political science and the social sciences, philosophy, economics, that man is a wolf to man. And that everything starts with competition and being nasty to each other. But actually, it's very unfair to wolves, because wolves are cooperative animals who make their living by working together. And I would say the same applies to humans. Humans may be nasty. We know they're nasty to each other on occasion. But humans have a lot of pro-social tendencies, and it's very interesting to consider those if you consider the origins of morality. So instead of looking at morality as a struggle with nature, as people have done, it could be in line with nature. So the view in biology, I'm a biologist by training, and of course we all know natural selection is not a nice process. It's a process of elimination. Those who do best will pass on their genes. It's not necessarily based on struggle, the struggle for life, because you may be better at finding food or your immune system may be better. It's not necessarily two animals who fight and then one of them wins, which is really the view of nature that exists. And that was not necessarily Darwin's view. Darwin literally said somewhere that struggle for life is not really the right term for what he's describing. So if you look from natural selection, there's sort of two schools of how you may get to morality. One is that nature is nasty and can only produce a nasty human nature, and morality is a little veneer that goes over that, which I would argue is the dominant view until about the year 2000. Everything started to change around that time. But that was the dominant view from when I was a student in the 60s and 70s until the year 2000. And then the other school would say that natural selection can produce almost anything and has produced almost anything, including it can produce social tendencies, and morality is an extension from that. So those are very different schools of thought. Huxley, who was known as Darwin's bulldog because he was so effective in defending evolutionary theory, said about morality that it's a departure from nature, it is uniquely human, and it is calculated. And so he proposed basically that morality is not grounded in human nature, it's something we have added on to it, and doesn't have the deep roots that other behaviors have. This is the most often quoted line in the literature of that time. With approval, scratch an altruist and watch a hypocrite bleed. And basically it argues, of course, that if you meet kind people, people who help you, there must be some ulterior motive behind it, because they're really not naturally kind. That's an impossibility. Dawkins also, this is the last line of the selfish gene, where he first tells us that everything we do is controlled by genes and we cannot do anything about it, except in the last line where he says, we alone on Earth, this is the uniqueness claim of Huxley, we alone can rebel against these genes and we can go beyond them. Now, you may be laughing, but if you read that literature, that's exactly the picture you got. And I got very pessimistic about it, because I think it was totally out of line with what we know about human behavior or animal behavior, or what Darwin had said. Because Darwin, he was much smarter than most of his followers. He said morality is a product of evolution, it's continuous with what animals do, and it's emotionally based. He was very influenced by David Hume and Adam Smith, and he felt the emotions needed to be recognized in there. He wrote actually a whole book on emotions, the expression of emotions in man and animals. He was very much aware of that. So that's a totally different view. And that's why in the 70s and 80s, when people would say the Darwinian view is, and they would then give me the Huxleyan one, was so totally out of line with what Darwin had said. This is a quote from Darwin. any animal, whatever, endowed with well-marked social instincts would inevitably acquire a moral sense or conscience as soon as it has the intellectual powers that humans have. And so Darwin saw continuity between humans and animals in this regard, and he didn't have particular trouble trying to explain where morality came from. So those are the two schools, and I don't know what changed, but we got these articles out. Well, I started writing on the topic, but also out of psychology and economics. For example, in behavioral economics, it was discovered that humans are far more cooperative than they had ever assumed. And there's even a book that recently came out called Super Cooperators for Humans. So that's how cooperative we are. We are super cooperators. And then there's articles by Jonathan Haidt, a psychologist, who found that we, at an intuitive level, arrive at moral solutions. Or neuroscience studies that show that very ancient parts of the brain are involved. So instead of it everything happening prefrontally, as Kant would probably think, like prefrontal decision-making, there's very old emotional centers that are involved in moral decision-making. So I'm going to go over a number of topics related to this. Reconciliation, empathy and consolation, self-awareness, pro-social tendencies and fairness. And all of these relate to what I think morality actually is, a moral system. I'm not arguing that a chimp is a moral being the way you are a moral being, or most of you are moral beings, let's say that way. I think morality is a system that enhances cooperation within the group. Unfortunately, it is very in-group biased. And so we have trouble stretching it out, that system, now to have, for example, universal human rights, because actually, originally, morality is an in-group system that enhances cooperation in the group. And everything it can do, and reconciliation is part of that, fairness is part of that, all of that is to resolve conflicts of interest within the group in order to achieve a better level of cooperation in the group. So first, something about conflict resolution. Chimpanzees, these are actually two male chimpanzees who have been in a fight, end up in the tree, and one of them holds out a hand to the other one and begs the other one for contact. And about a second later, they come together and they kiss and embrace each other. That's a reconciliation. And reconciliation was first found in chimpanzees, but then it was found in many other primates. I think it has been found now in 25 different primates. Then it was found in hyenas, in dolphins, in elephants, in wolves, all sorts of animals. And actually, we have now reached the point where if you would have a social animal, you would have a social mammal that is highly cooperative, but also has a lot of conflicts, and they would show no reconciliations after fights, we would be very puzzled. We would say, well, how is that possible? How can they manage a group system without making up after fights? So this is the definition we use, a friendly reunion between former opponents not long after conflict. The not long is just purely for practical reasons, because in humans, people reconcile after 10 years and sometimes after several generations or something like that. So in chimpanzees, I think also it can take a long time, but it's very hard to do that in studies. Stump-tailed monkeys are the most conciliatory monkeys that I know. They do what we call a hold-bottom ritual. One of them presents, the other one holds the hips. And they have no eye contact. It's very interesting because the monkeys do these things without eye contact. Chimps and humans cannot do that. If you would have a big fight with your boss and you would go to his office and apologize for throwing a mug at him or whatever you did, you know, you apologize and your boss keeps staring at his papers or at the ceiling and says, well, it's okay. It's not okay. You need eye contact. And that same is true for the apes. The apes need eye contact, but the monkeys don't. So this is how we study that. We look at how often do two individuals get together after conflict, and then in a control period, we look how often do they get together if there's no fight between them. And the difference between them tells you that these monkeys get far more often together after a conflict than without a conflict between them. So it's exactly the opposite of what I learned when I was a student, because all the textbooks at the time, they said aggression drives individuals apart. Aggression is a dispersal mechanism, which is a perfectly fine definition for territorial animals like fish or birds. But in the monkeys, it's exactly the opposite. Aggression brings individuals together. I should add on a personal note here, I discovered this reconciliation behavior, I think partly because I'm from a family of six boys. And I had never that idea that they tried to drill into me when I came to the field of animal behavior. They would say, aggression is bad. Aggression is always bad. And, you know, if you live in a large family, there's so much conflict going on, and it's not necessarily bad. It's no big deal, really. Bonobos. Bonobos do everything with sex, so also reconcile with sex. which they're famous for. So I'll show you a little video which comes from Kinshasa, comes from a sanctuary where we actually do now studies of empathy in bonobos. This little video shows in a nutshell what bonobos do. The easiest way to get conflict among bonobos is to introduce food. Because as soon as food is introduced, like other animals, they try to compete over it, but they immediately resolve that within a second with having sex. And so basically what you do when you introduce food is you see them having sex in order to resolve the issues, and then they share the food. They have no trouble sharing at all.
Such fun. Better than war. The late Frans de Waal from Emory University, who was a giant in the study of animal behaviour and one of the star speakers at the AAAS in 2012, he died in March, 3 weeks ago,